Hello, everybody, and welcome to this very first episode of the Internet Storm Center Micro Podcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich, and I am the Chief Research Officer for the SANS Institute. And as part of my responsibilities, I'm also taking care of all the technical aspects and so of the Internet Storm Center. So, what we did for a while now, for a few months, is that myself and Joel Essler, we got together once in a while to produce like a real nice half hour to full hour podcast. Now, the problem with that is that neither one of us has a lot of extra time, and it's hard to get the two of us into a room or on the same phone line regularly. So while we still are going to continue these real podcasts, what I thought would be nice is to come up with a format that allows us to publish these podcasts more frequently. And this is essentially how the idea was born to create these micro podcasts. Now, what I call a micro podcast is really just a short podcast episode of 5 to 10 minutes in length. And we hope to publish them much, much more frequently, maybe even daily. So what are you listening to right now is really the first attempt to publish one of these micro podcasts. And I would be very interested in hearing any feedback that you have to this idea. If you're interested in listening and subscribing to these podcasts, what you expect from it or what you do not want us to do with these podcasts. Now, if you do have any feedback, you can reach me via the Internet Storm Center. Just use the contact link at the top, which will get you to our contact form. Or you can also reach us via email directly via handlers@sans.org. Now, enough introduction. Let me get to some of the material for this podcast. The first item I want to cover is these reflective DNS attacks that certainly occupy us for quite a while now. Actually, in a recent comment in the SANS News Bites, I mentioned that this is not a new attack. It's a couple of years old. We got an email from Vern Stark. He actually mentioned that one of these attacks that he observed back in 2002 is in the SANS material for the intrusion detection in-depth class since around that time. Judy Novak, she maintains that material, and a lot of the credit goes to her. We actually also have some packet captures in this class about a tool that was supposed to launch these attacks, but didn't quite work right. Just 2 bytes were actually flipped in this tool, which made the packets ascend really nonsense. But, well, once fixed, the tool, of course, was able to launch this attack. And this was not the only tool. This was not the tool that triggered it all. The earliest reference I've seen so far to these attacks is from 99. In 1999, somebody published a paper describing, or it wasn't really a paper, it was more really sort of an email announcement. Aussert picked that up and participated in it. But essentially what that alert announces is that there's this fundamental problem. You have these UDP DNS requests that are not authenticated and very easily spoofed that solicit responses which are much larger than the initial request. And the prime example for that is the name servers for the root zone, because that particular answer is designed around the idea to fill as many bytes as possible within the traditional 512-byte limit that you have in DNS responses. And on the other hand, the query for it, the request, is about the shortest, if not the shortest, DNS query you can send. Actually, I haven't found a shorter DNS query that you could possibly send that solicits actually a response, aside from illegal DNS queries. So what does that teach us? You know, definitely the old rule, learn your history. It's always a hard thing for us to do, to figure out, in particular in a class like 503, the Intrusion Detection Depth class, how much of these old attacks we are supposed to include. For example, a land attack. It's old. It's very old. Like, you know, first time it was fixed was like around 95. It was known before that. But it came back. It came back in XP Service Pack 2. It came back in some IPv6 stacks and such. So definitely from an intrusion detection standpoint, don't forget about these old attacks. They are still around. They're still important. And if you start forgetting about them, well, what's going to happen is they're going to come back, you're being unprepared for it, and, well, they're coming back now much more dangerous based on the growth of the internet, based on having a lot of home users around with rather beefy bandwidth pipes. All of that makes these attacks much more dangerous today than they already have been in the past. Another thing I want to bring up is the sort of latest development on reverse engineering and understanding this nasty configure warm. It's really amazing how this piece of malware, I just want to call it, was able to infect so many systems so quickly and how it has become so resilient. Now, Boyan published a nice new diary yesterday. I don't want to have that lost because it was published on a Sunday. Boyan is an amazing reverse engineer when it comes to reverse engineering malware. And he's outlining in his diary a couple tricks that Configure plays to make itself harder to remove from systems and easier to take a foothold. So what it does, and one thing, of course, Boyan points out is how does it inject itself into running processes like services. It typically does not run as its own process, but like other malware, to inject itself. I won't go too much about it in details. You have to look at Boyan's diary for that part because that's really hard to just explain on a podcast without the screenshots he has in his diary. But there are two other items I want to bring up that are easier to mention on a podcast. One is that Configure actually patches MS-0867, the one vulnerability it uses usually to get into systems, in RAM. And that's kind of quite tricky because once you remove Configure, you will be vulnerable again. Like a lot of other malware just patches the vulnerability. However, if you now remove the malware, you're no longer vulnerable and the malware can no longer come back and reinfect you. Now with Configure, it just patches the vulnerability in memory. So as soon as you remove the worm, you are vulnerable again. If you remove Configure from a system, remember that you still have to patch MS-0867. And you have to do so quickly. If you're in a network that's haunted by Configure, that may not be an easy task to do. So, you know, set up your firewalls and maybe put that system into a little isolated segment, a little Linksys firewall or something like this may be helpful to get you the time that you need to patch the system. The other interesting thing Configure does is it deletes all system restore points. Because, well, if you get infected, one of the quick, cheap fixes to sort of get back into business is to just go back to the last system restore point. Not an option with Configure because it deletes all your system restore points, so you're lost unless you have good backups. And anybody around here has good backups? That's always a big, big challenge. So much about Configure and malware. Mari posted a diary on Saturday, and she's talking a little bit more philosophical approach there. Are we all just desensitized to data loss? I sometimes say to people, hey, just post your social security number, your credit card numbers out there. They're probably already out somewhere. And by posting your social security number out there, if you all do it, it kind of loses its value as an identifier. And it would be of no value to the people that stole it too. Well, that may be a little bit an extreme approach. One thing I want to point out about Mary's diary that's quite useful, she has a link to sort of an authenticated or an authoritative list of all the state legislation that exists with respect to data breaches and notification laws. The website is the National Conference of State Legislators, which essentially took it upon themselves to collect all this different legislation from different states. Of course, that's constantly being updated. The last update I'm looking at right now is December 16th, 2008. At that point, 44 states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Virgin Islands have enacted legislation requiring notification of security breaches. And I'm reading that off the website here. It also has links to all the state laws. So if you have a breach, you can use this as a reference to figure out what you have to do. probably not necessarily something you want to do personally. I would highly suggest to ask a lawyer to take care of that. But still, you know, something to stay aware of and something to also put in your incident response procedure, because that's one of the things you have to deal with in incident response is who do you have to notify of that particular breach. And now I got one more fun item for you. What are the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0 mean to you? Well, probably not much other than it's a sequence, but February 13th at 2330 hours approximately, we will reach Unix timestamp 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0, or 1,234,567,890 seconds from the Unix epoch, which was January 1st, 1970. So if you are into that, you know, have a party, have fun. It's Friday afternoon, so couldn't fall on a better date. I guess when they set up that day, the epoch in January 1st, 1970, they could have set it to 1960, but they probably thought of you having a good time on Friday the 13th. With that, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing to these micro podcasts. I hope we can put out more of them. I asked all the people that hold a GI Gold certification if they want to participate. If anybody else has something to participate, I'm not going to throw it out if it's a good submission. So hope this will take off and hope I'll find the time to keep this up. Maybe not daily, maybe every other day. Let's see how it works. Thanks and bye.